Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th day of September. Where does time fly? Anno Domini 2020, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. No Steve yet, but the news. Federal and state officials are seeing a big uptick in infections coming from Lokibot, an open-source DIY malware package for Windows that is openly sold and even traded for free in underground forums. It steals passwords and cryptocurrency wallets, and it can download and install new malware. In an alert published on Tuesday, the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency and the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center said Lokibot activity has scaled up dramatically in the past 2 months. The increase was measured by Einstein, an automated intrusion detection system for collecting, correlating, analyzing, and sharing computer security information across the federal civilian departments and agencies. While not quite as prevalent or noxious as the Emotet malware, which is also back, Lokibot remains a serious and widespread menace. The info stealer spreads through a variety of methods, including malicious email attachments, exploitation of software vulnerabilities, and Trojans sneaked into pirated or free apps. Its simple interface and reliable code base has made it attractive to a wide range of crooks, including those who are new to cybercrime and have few technical skills, or as we call them, cyber kiddies. Yeah. Einstein isn't the only source that's measuring an increase in Lokibot activity of late. Shira DeGrippo, Senior Director of Threat Research and Detection at security firm Proofpoint, said Emotet typically dwarfs Lokibot by an order of magnitude, with volume on Monday being around 300,000 for Emotet versus only 1,000 for Lokibot. Last Thursday, however, DeGrippo counted a Lokibot run of more than 1 million messages. The malware includes a keylogger that records passwords and other sensitive keystrokes, code that harvests passwords stored in browsers, administrative tools, and cryptocurrency wallets, and can steal information from more than 100 different applications. Researchers at Palo Alto Network said that the Lokibot is the most popular tool used by Silver Terrier, a Nigerian crime group known for performing business email compromises that scam high-ranking employees into wiring company funds overseas. Protecting against Lokibot involves the usual advice about being highly judicious before opening email attachments, not enabling Microsoft Office macros without ample experience and a good reason, steering clear of software that's pirated or comes from unknown sources, and remaining skeptical online. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Lokibot is on the rise. Your choices are, I'm protected, I think I'm protected, you poor Windows users, I loved him in the Avengers, and other. So far, we've got 69 votes, and I think I'm protected is just edging out I'm protected. I'm protected is tied with you poor Windows users. And I love them in the Avengers. And anyway, you can give us a call. I know you have something to say about this. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I was surprised at the number that it was only a million.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, folks say, well, a million, that's a lot. No, not nowadays. I mean, if you're talking maybe a billion, then yeah, that's cranking a lot. But a million nowadays,
it's really not a lot.
That's pocket lint.
Right.
As far as, you know, emails going out there and that. So, you know.
But considering that it's normally about 1,000 a day,
yeah,
hitting a million is big.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that's, it's ridiculously easy to use. It's basically just a script. All you have to do is fill in the pieces you want.
Yeah.
and send it out. You're done.
Well, like they say, the script kiddies, which, you know, we've been talking about for decades, are always looking for an easy way, because they can't use much brain power as it is anyways,
right,
to create something new and innovative on their own. They're trying to always spawn off of somebody else's idea and then, oh, call it theirs because they renamed it.
Right. Exactly right. But they, yeah, so it's out there. They're all out there. And these things are spread by emails and attachments that have office attachments that have malicious stuff in them. So be very, very careful what you open and what you see. If you get an email message from somebody who normally doesn't send you emails or doesn't send you attachments, check with them before you open it. Make sure that they really sent it. It takes just an extra minute.
Yeah.
If they sent it to you, then they're on their computer. So if they don't answer right away, then it probably wasn't them.
Yeah, most likely. It's a safe guess.
All right. We're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Nancy from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Nancy. What's up?
Hi. I bought a Windows 10 computer. And when I hooked up my HP Envy printer scanner, it's a 5055, it will not scan to the Windows 10 like it did to Windows 7. What do I need to do?
Okay, what often happens with, did you update this machine from 7 to 10?
I had to go from a, no, I didn't update it. I bought a Windows 10.
Okay, so when you go into printers, do you see this printer at all?
No, it will not. I can just use the computer copy machine by itself, but to scan something to the computer, it will not work. I don't know why.
Now, you installed the full software package, because I'm taking this is a like an all-in-one?
Yeah.
Printer, scanner, and all that stuff?
It's separate.
Yeah, but it does printing as well as scanning.
Yeah, scan, print.
Yeah, that's what we call an all-in-one.
Okay.
So, yeah. All right. Now, when you you got this new computer, you took the CD and reinstalled that software for all those functions?
Oh, no, I did not do that.
Yeah, see, you've got to reinstall, because Windows will find the printer. It's smart enough to do that. But as far as the other functions, you actually, what I would recommend is going to the website,
okay,
for that particular printer and download the latest version of the software package. In other words, it'll be a package for Windows 10. Say it's like an HP 8710.
Yeah.
Which is an all-in-one. Yeah, I would go up to the HP website, you know, or if that's what your brand is, and download a version that'll work with Windows 10 that will include installing the printer, the scanner, you know, the copier, and all those functions, because usually you have that function on these printers.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And that website is HP.com.
HP.com.
Right. You've got an Envy, correct?
Yes.
The HP Envy printer. Yeah. Go to HP.com.
Yeah.
And when you get there, you can select from the top, you can just type in Envy printer in the search box up near the top right.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, when you buy a printer these days, often Windows will connect directly to it and find it
finds
as a printer.
That. Yep.
But if you want to use the other functions like scanning
the copying,
and copying,
yeah,
then you need to load some additional drivers, and often Windows 10 doesn't pick those up. So in order to add those, you need to go to the website and download the higher end driver, so that that'll make it do everything you need it to do. It's not difficult. And in fact, once you download it, you double click on it, it leads you right through the process. But it doesn't happen automatically sometimes. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you're lucky. Good for you. But sometimes it doesn't. All right. Oh, before we go back to the phones, I should mention that tomorrow is Google's birthday.
Ooh. What are you getting it?
I'm getting it to do some more work for me when I search for things.
you're giving it a whole lot of data.
That is exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gene from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gene. What's up?
Well, I was thumbing through a lot of the news things that are on the computer, and all of a sudden I hit one thing, and I got a critical alert from Windows. Since you were talking about cybersecurity, I'm just wondering whether this is legal or it's a scam. They say my computer is blocked. Do not close this window and restart your computer.
Yeah, it's what's the polite word? Bogus.
Yep.
Yeah, it gives me a telephone to call.
Yeah, no, just ignore it. If you can shut the window, just shut it.
Turn the machine off.
Well, it at least shut the window. If you're on the web and you got it, then you just have to close the window.
Yeah, or what I would do, just to be safe, to flush anything out of
it. Yeah,
what you do is go to the lower right-hand, left-hand corner, click on the start button where it says shut down, shut it down, let it shut down completely. That way, anything that might be resident in the memory or anything else, it will totally flush it, count to 10, and then restart your machine.
Wonderful. Okay, appreciate your help.
Keep up
the good work.
Thank you, Gene. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
We are joined by Mr. Steve Ray.
Woo-hoo!
We're very excited.
I could have been on time or had donuts.
We appreciate that you were late.
That's okay.
That was me today. I mean, I didn't get donuts, but everything I did today took longer than I thought it would.
Yeah.
I think all three of us, because... Yeah. He wound up pulling, as you would say, a Dave, and I was up until 1 o'clock.
Yes, you were. You have a history.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the whole problem is I get so focused on something. And what it was is this new software. Well, it's new to me. And you would know about it, RTTY. It's radio type, teletype. And there's a big contest going on.
RTTY.
So, yeah, RTTY. And I was teaching myself how to set up this other software to do it. Because that's what it is like. Instead of seeing the old, ticker tape come out of the machines like I remember, you could sit there on a, look like a little keyboard, and type holes into this paper. And it was literally sending over telegraph wire the messages. And that's the way it was done a long time ago, folks.
Sure, punch tape.
Yeah. So you can do this, because it's still radio waves. That's the way they did it. It was all on radio waves. And it's still used to this day. So there's a contest going on. And I got sort of sucked into that big time. And then I got talking to this one guy down in South Africa. And he, I was just ready to pull the plug, try to go to bed early.
Sure.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen.
If only you had some sort of device that you carried around with you that you could set an alarm on. Wouldn't that be clever?
I just ignored it another 10 minutes.
That's the problem, because you're always at that 10-minute snooze.
Well, that's what I did back when you got me first set up. Remember? And I had Lori and I had a wake-up service.
Yep.
And I was there for the first wake-up call. Already still awake. Don't worry about the second call. Well, I'll call just in case. I'm glad you did, because I was starting to get a little tired. And boom, the second wake-up call came in. And
that was the morning I got a wake-up call from you. Two words. Like it was my fault. What happened was I had helped him connect to a cable internet the night before.
Yeah, because we had just got it in the shop.
Yep, and I had helped him set it up and make it and get it running and all of that. And as I, he was ignoring me. The minute he got on, he was just everywhere on the internet. He wasn't talking to me. He's all hunched over his keyboard, staring at the screen. I said, Dave, do you want me to call you later so you'll go to bed? No, I can do this. You sure? Because I'll be happy to. No, I love you. Okay, okay, okay. Then at 6 o'clock in the morning, I get a call. Two words. Like it was my fault.
Oh, that moment. And the only other moment that was really great was that I remember so well is the time my late wife came in. I was, again, focused, you know, because I was doing so much of this stuff since we got going on it. And it was a month later. And all of a sudden she comes to the den doorway. And she goes, we got to talk.
That's never a good sound from his wife.
That's never a good
tone. That's never a good tone. And especially when she sat there and said, David.
Uh-oh.
Oh, whole name.
Yeah.
Did she use your middle name? Then you really know.
Then you just leave the house.
Yeah. Quick clues. But she stands in the door and she's got this paper in her hand. Yeah, dear. We have to talk. When the phone bill is more than the mortgage payment.
Wow.
We got to do something. Well, that's when we were getting on all the bulletin boards and everything else.
And by we, you mean you.
Yeah, 300 baud modem. I just turned to her and I said, okay, I guess I got to get a faster modem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I stepped up to 1,200. But yes, it's like, whoa. But that's when, you know, we were paying for connect time and that.
That's right. You so, young whippersnappers, you don't know how good you got it.
Somebody in one of the airplane forums I was reading posted a picture of an airplane they found virtually new in the box in a dumpster. And so half the comments were, you know, fake, you know, really sure. And the other half was some guy must have really upset his wife.
Yeah.
Get rid of all this stuff. It's like the old story about the car. You find a classic car for $100.
Well, yeah.
My husband ran off with another woman and told me to sell his stuff. So I am.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Before we go to a break, we got a couple text questions coming in. And the first one is, hi, are there any programs that you use /like to find and update drivers on your PC?
Generally speaking, Windows does that itself.
Yeah.
And the Mac also. A lot of the driver companies have turned that over to the OS level so that they can
Linux
make sure the latest ones are. Yeah.
Chrome OS does it. So most of those are fine. The only other thing I would suggest, and it isn't automated, I'm afraid, is you make a list of the drivers you have, the hardware you have, the peripherals you have, and then like that HP Envy printer, and go to the website and check there. But the reality is that for most of those, once the right driver is installed, it will update correctly.
HP and Dell, I think, both offer a service within their...
Yeah, if you have a name brand computer, often
they'll,
the computer
they'll,
has
you
that
can
too.
Go to their site. They have usually an app on there that will suggest updates for your particular computer to keep it updated.
There are several driver update programs you can get that will track your drivers for you, but it's one of those things where you don't really need that.
Well, I'm always leery on that because just like anything else, when they roll out a new driver, and we've said it for decades, is that you can tell the pioneers they have the arrows in their back.
Right.
And, you know, they roll out a new driver, and then all of a sudden something that was working fine due to the Windows updates, all of a sudden your machine goes wonked.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden stuff doesn't work correctly. So, you know, you got to be a little cautious in doing that. All right, the next question. My Dell D... Here, let me... I got to get a little closer for this. My Dell D630 display died. I do have a second monitor in extended desktop mode. Is there a keystroke at boot time to mirror the main display? Macs have F1 to mirror a second display at boot time. Jerry in Rochester.
You should be able to go. Oh, of course you.
Well, a key command. The Windows key and P, at least as of January 2018, that would switch you between the mirroring or extended. So the two monitors extend each other.
And that's what he needs to do, because if the main monitor is dead, anything he brings up is going to be on that main monitor. You can't see it. Mm-hmm. So the Windows key and followed by P should do
it. It's not, you know, P for what? Yeah. You'd think maybe D for display. It's P for display. Display.
Yeah, probably.
Pop your P. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Here's some shortcuts for accessibility.
But the problem is that that'll all be on that one thing. So, it should see, but the problem is, I think what it brings up is a menu.
Mm-hmm.
And you choose from that menu. And if you can't see the menu,
you're hosed.
Let me see. Let's see the window. So that brings up the menu.
Yeah.
Mirror. There we go. Mirror. Press Windows P and you get an pop up in the right hand corner.
Right.
So theoretically, then the second command down is duplicate. So if you down arrow and return,
right,
or enter,
you should
that might
get
work.
There. Yeah. That's the best thing I can suggest you try, Jerry.
It's primary screen, then duplicate, then extend, and then second only are the four choices.
Right. So,
hopefully that helps.
Hopefully.
Get that on one of those Windows computers.
Alternately,
over there.
You could.
Like that next gen one that's running the radio station.
Alternately, you. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, and then Rob tries to log in.
Yeah.
And goes bonkers because he's not seeing the main screen that he wants to see.
Right. But alternately, depending on how your setup is, you should be able to unplug the second monitor from whatever device you've got running two of them and plug it in as the only monitor.
Yeah.
And it
but
should
sometimes
work.
The port is active rather than...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on most desktop units, if you plug... If you've got it set up for two monitors... And you've got the second one on, obviously, the second port. You move it from there to the first one, you're going to see that first screen.
Theoretically, that's the way it should work.
That's the way it works. I know it does because I'm running four monitors on two different computers.
Right. Yeah, most of the video ports will detect you have a screen there, and most of the screens will detect which video port is on.
Right.
I'm finding another answer here that the Windows P brings up the menu, and then keep hitting P to move through the choices.
While holding the Windows key or just hit P? Well, try both.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't hurt.
Yeah, so there you go, Jerry.
Oh, wait a minute. He's saying, hold on. The Dell 960 is a laptop.
Oh, internal display takes priority.
Yeah.
What we have done on occasion is open the computer up and unplug the internal display.
Yes.
Then it doesn't know it have one.
But one of the choices is external monitor only.
Yeah.
So again, if you keep cycling through, hit that Windows P key and then keep cycling through, you should eventually just see the external monitor. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we had a text from Will down in Hampton, PA. And he wanted to know, he's running Python 3.8.5 on Windows 7. He's using an input statement to keep the input window open. And is there a better way to do that? No. That's the short answer. The longer answer is, sorry, no. And the even longer answer is the only way that I know of to do that is to is to run the command in an already open window. Right, then it runs the command and ends, but the window stays open because it was already open, and then you can see whatever result of the program there was. That is the only way. You can use, depending on how long you need it open, you could use a sleep command. So, you know, sleep, open paren, the number 10, close paren, would sleep the program for 10 seconds before it ends. So you'd have 10 seconds to read the screen. That's the only other way I know to do that. Sorry. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. Hiya, Kevin. What's up?
Hi. You had somebody call in before about having a scanner, all-in-one scanner, not working. I had a similar thing happen with my Epson all-in-one after I had downloaded a new set of drivers from the Epson website, and maybe I just missed the scanner drivers and Windows 10 only picked up the printer drivers. But the scanner software appears on the desktop, but it won't find the scanner.
Interesting.
The scanner, if you go from the all-in-one and say scan to PC, it says it can't find the computer. But if I put a flash drive in the USB port on the all-in-one unit and say scan to USB, it'll happily scan to the USB. Then it turns out the computer, because it's hardwired to the all-in-one, recognizes that USB port. It sees the file that the scanner just created in the USB. It won't scan directly. But that may be a workaround that somebody may have to do if they can't get the drivers to work right.
That's nuts.
No. It's nuts.
It is nuts.
But that's what's happened. And, you know, that was, okay, I need to scan this now, and I don't need to fool around with trying to upload, download drivers. It's like, oh, it'll go into the USB? Fine. And I don't even have to move the USB out of that port into another port on the desktop. So just a weird thing that happened, but maybe somebody else.
That's a good workaround.
That's excellent. Yeah. That's excellent, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
I have also seen on some of the Epson all-in-ones, the scanner driver and printer driver are separate downloads. They don't have a single download for everything.
That is too bad. I had, I have an all-in-one. Mine's a brother. I have an all-in-one. And when I connected my Linux machine, I couldn't scan. But then I just loaded the, scanner software that comes with Linux,
mm-hmm.
and it just happily went out and said, "Oh, look, you've got a printer, a scanner out there. Do you want to use it?" Yes, mm-hmm. please. Now we're done.
There's some generic protocols that have been developed to. It makes it easier for the companies don't have to write their own super detailed drivers, but it also makes it easy to run weird things on weird things.
right, exactly.
All right, another text says hi. For Jerry's monitor problem, most laptops have a function plus key number that sends the display to an external monitor. Has he tried?
Yes, good point.
Yeah. That is a good point. Excellent point.
Yeah, on the laptop, there's usually an F key and one of the alternate keys that looks like two little rectangles.
Yeah, two monitors. Yeah.
Well, it's two little rectangles that are supposedly your two monitors.
Yeah, right.
And so hitting that key, usually with the Alt or the FN key, will switch between mirroring, spanning, or second monitor only.
Yeah, and a lot of them, once you hook a monitor up to that second or to that external port,
right,
it usually senses it and will pick it up.
Because he is on a laptop.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right.
Oh, I guess telling Nick.
But it may default to spanning mode and not mirroring mode.
Right.
Yeah.
I just saw, speaking of laptops.
Spanning mode would also work because now the stuff in the lower right corner will be on that second monitor.
Not necessarily.
And then you can do the Windows. Well, no. If it's spanning, it will. Oh, it depends on which side.
Yeah. No, I was telling Nick, I saw this new device that they've just brought out for laptops. And what it is it's like a fan fold. You open it up, and it's got two monitors on either side. You take it, and you slide it over the back of your laptop monitor. You hook in the two USB cords, you power it up, and now instead of having just that one monitor, you have two one on the left, one on the right, along with the center, and kind of expands your desktop. And like we were saying, more and more folks nowadays, I mean, most office environments and everything else, folks need more than one monitor.
Yeah.
Because they're doing multiple things and things going on. Now, that is a slick idea.
And now USB has the bandwidth to run monitors.
Yeah, USB 3. I mean, it's... You know, it's unbelievable. So I thought, wow, that's cool and easy to. I mean, it folds up no bigger than your laptop. So they showed the guy literally taking this, opening it up, and then flipping his laptop up because they were stacked on top of each other. Opened it up, quick plugged it in, turned the thing on. Boom! He's got three monitors now.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice.
I don't know the price on it, but hey,
and yes, for a lot of people, they work in multiple products at the same time. You've got to put some data from a website into an Excel spreadsheet and et cetera, et cetera. So having multiple monitors can be more useful.
I know people that keep like their Twitter feed open on their laptop monitor while they're doing their work on the big monitor.
Right. Right. At one point, I had a Mac Mini in my office at work, and I used it solely for email. So it was always open, and when support calls came in, I could look at them right there and see if somebody else picked them. It wasn't my email. It was the support call system.
Yep.
And if a call came in, I could see who was handling it, who wasn't handling it, you know, whatever needed to be done. And I could keep it open all the time. That was nice.
And nowadays, a lot of TVs have monitor sharing built into the TV, like what we're doing here. So yeah. I have the TV connected to my laptop through wireless and displaying it as a third monitor.
Yep.
Somebody says, on this Dell, it's my F7 key.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've seen it's usually the
F6 or
F7.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. They're not consistent, you know, from one brand to the other on what key to use.
But it often has that little two little rectangles.
Yeah, it looks like two monitors sitting, you know, next to each other. It's the best way to describe it. And it's usually over towards the left-hand side of the screen.
Right. So, yes, thank you, whoever sent that text. Jerry should try the F7 key in connection, I think with the function key, I think.
Probably, yeah.
That should do it. So function
the,
F7.
Yeah, with the F'n key.
The F'n key. I had a boss once when I worked at a bank. My cubicle was across the hall from his office, and he would often yell F1, F1. And I'd go to the office and say, "Why are you yelling F1? F1 is help, and that's you. Come in here." Okay. I was his help.
Read a story about a little kid who found a box of floppy disks in their parents' closet or something. Is why did you 3D print the save icon?
Yeah, right.
Never saw a floppy disk before, but knew that was the save icon.
Exactly. That's how it works. Yeah, there's so much old stuff that we've lost. I was actually, just for the heck of it, I was on my Linux machine last night, and I typed in the search for, you know, you can search for software that's available for your machine, and I typed in BBS. And lo, there's a half a dozen BBS programs that are available for Linux that you could set up a bulletin board system.
There's a FidoNet group on Facebook I read now and then. Yes. The irony of a FidoNet group on Facebook is pretty cool.
FidoNet. Oh, I remember that too well. That little dog logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just like going to the Chinese lunches.
Yeah, exactly.
At the restaurant. Yeah, it all.
Those are fun.
Rent out the party room and 30 guys eating Chinese food.
there was a point at which apparently the top two busiest systems on the BBS and the FidoNet in Rochester were Paul Casarino's and mine.
Yep.
Yeah.
His was files, mine was messages.
Yeah, I remember Paul getting all those disk drives, CD-ROM drives, putting our whole library. So you didn't have to, because back in the day, folks, when we used to go to meetings, you'd bring a bunch
of kids don't know.
You'd bring a bunch of empty floppies, And because he would have the whole library list of different programs, and they'd be, you know,
all on CD.
All on CD. And he would, you'd bring in a disc, and what he would do is copy the program from there onto your disc so you could take it home and install it.
Or if you're really nice, you brought a bunch of full floppies to help hand out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will tell you, you want to talk about being a geek? When I was the librarian for Apple Cider, I wrote a HyperCard stack.
I probably still have that.
You probably do.
All the discs are in my closet at home. Actually, no, three and a half. So I don't know what happened to the five and a quarters.
No, these were three and a half.
Yeah.
Because it was a Mac.
Yeah.
And I would, and all I had to do was, you know, somebody would say, I want disc number 43.
Mm-hmm.
I would type in 43 and hit enter, and it would say, okay, insert the disc. I'd insert the disc.
Yeah.
It would copy it. It would pop out the disc and say next disc.
All the labels with their program names on them and their numbers so you could find them again.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I remember doing that for that. And that, you know, it used to be hours.
Mm-hmm.
Hours every day.
Yeah.
Because people wanted software. Nowadays, you just go online and you download it.
Get the latest.
But back then, you waited a month.
Yeah.
You brought discs and then you waited another month to take them home.
Yep.
Yeah, because it took a month to download that on your dial-up.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, we had...
We even had one of the floppy duplicator, and the Mac had an auto-inject and auto-eject function. So you could
stack them up.
Stack a disc, and a little arm would push it in, where then the drive would grab it and pull it the rest of the way in, make the copy, and then spit it out, where it would fall into the pile, and the next one would come down. You could feed it through. So you could make like 100 discs a day.
Yep. But those were the days. Nowadays, it's just...
The joke was everything is getting so much bigger. I used to carry like 50 floppy disks with me to put all the utilities and tools and updates I needed because I couldn't be sure they'd have internet where I went. Well, then it went from 50 floppies to a dozen CDs. And now I don't carry anything because you can download it.
Right. And in between those two, it was a thumb drive.
Thumb drive, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a thumb drive, and I loved it in that it, you know, you put a SD card in it.
Yep.
But you could lock it.
Yeah.
So that way when I still have
at least one of those, if not two.
You could go to a client, and if they had an infected machine, I could go ahead and put this USB in there and know that nothing, because I had one person one time, I was over there, so your machine's infected. And he saw me put the flash drive in, and he goes, well, how do I know it didn't come from there? I go, no.
No.
I said, this has got a lock on it. It can send stuff out, but it can't get anything back. So, yeah, no, I'm not taking anything off your machine or not infecting your machine. Your machine is infected. And I had to show them where the stuff was. And, we won't discuss the rest of it.
But. I remember it used to be that thumb drives and in those days SD cards were, you know, 64 meg. 256 meg.
Mm-hmm.
I remember getting my first 16 gig thumb drive, and I paid a ludicrously large amount of money for it. But I actually could fit all of the utilities I regularly used on that one card.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, lock it.
Yeah.
I remember the first gigabyte hard drive I bought. Gigabyte hard drive.
Yeah.
Sounded like a jet turbine spinning up.
Oh, I bet.
Five and tens.
Yeah. But we
those are hard 5 cards. And 10 megabytes, not gigabytes.
Hard cards. Yep. Remember the hard cards.
I remember the hard cards. Listen, I owned an Apple Cider, S-I-D-E-R. It sat on the side of an Apple III. It was 5 megabytes.
Yep.
It held every business program available for the Apple III and still had plenty of room for data.
Well, I can remember at Kodak when the hard cards came out. And, oh, that was the big thing. Oh, this is all the space you're going to need. And I spent close to over a year and a half going around to all these different departments installing hard carts.
Yep. I did the same at the bank. The funny thing was people wanted the 10 meg hard cards because they didn't trust the 20 meg hard cards. they didn't think they would, they thought they would die or not hold the data, or they were lying. I don't know what they thought.
Yeah.
They said, no, I want the 10. And it wasn't price, because the price difference wasn't that much.
Nope.
We made a big business for a while on PsyQuest discs. It was really popular in the graphic arts world.
Zip drive.
And we bought a CD burner, one of the very first. It was like $5,000 for this CD burner. And PsyQuest discs were like $100 each. So we could take five or six of those and put it on one CD for $300
right,
and give you $600 worth of PsyQuest discs back.
Nice.
We did a lot. It was really funny because some of the companies would advertise the PsyQuest capacity as 44 megs, and it formatted out to 42 and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were all mad. One company advertised it at 40 meg, and it formatted to 42 and a half, and they were all happy.
Exactly. It's just, it's all perception. I also had a Bernoulli drive.
Bernoulli, yeah.
Still got one of the discs.
I love their trade show demo they had on an alternating arm where it just would slam itself on the desk while it was playing a video.
Yeah.
Because the head could not crash.
Right.
Remember the Zip?
The Zips, yeah.
Zip discs. I've still got some of those.
And the Jazz.
The Blues, the Jazz drives.
Yeah. Jazz drives, yeah.
Yeah, Zip was more like a floppy and the Jazz was more like a hard drive.
Right.
But it was a removable cartridge.
Yeah.
I think that was...
And
that was one gig, I think, the first Jazz drives.
I think they might have been.
The Zips were 100 meg.
Right. And the Zips also were susceptible to the click of death.
Yep. Yeah, the Zip drives.
Yeah.
Remember those too well.
Remember 9-track tapes?
I do. I had, when I ran the Frog Pond BBS, I had a tape backup unit on it, and that backed up every single night.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, actually about
the 9-track
5 in the morning, which is when the BBS finally was quiet enough to actually take a backup.
The 9-track tape drive came out the year I was born.
Shut up. Shut the hell up. I'm serious now.
He's that old?
Yeah, right. We're that old. Because we remember BT, before tape.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I remember I had an Atari 400 and I couldn't afford the disk drive, so I ended up with the cassette drive to save my files onto.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I actually thought I was cleaning things up. I know that's a shock in itself. But I found a box of cassette tapes for my Jupiter Ace.
Oh, wow.
Which was it was one of those little single board keyboard computers that ran Forth as the programming language. And of course, I've still got the somewhere in my closet underneath everything else. I've still got a Jupiter Ace. I doubt I'll ever dig it out and plug it in, but I've got one. Now I just have to find a tape recorder. That's the hard part.
You might be able to find a USB one.
That's true. No, but that won't take it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's
one thing a lot of folks don't realize. Back when the first personal computers first came out, I mean, it was a big deal just to have floppy drive, a colored monitor that did maybe 256 colors, a mouse. You didn't have a CD-ROM drive.
Yep.
Right.
And, you know, the monitors, like I say, there were 256. You talk about the graphics and everything else on them. It was like,
Even before that, it was the, you know, green or amber. Those were your choices.
Yep.
Hey, did we ever talk about Will's text message about Python?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did we? Okay, good.
Yeah.
And the answer was no.
You told him no.
All right, no in the longer answer. Right. Okay, good. All right, I don't have to keep that tab open anymore.
Oh, wait a minute. We got another one in here. Let's see here. All right. Let me get the mic over here before we go to break.
What's interesting is that the younger kids just take everything for granted because they grew up with computers, and it's the older people that are having trouble adapting to the new way things are happening.
Right.
All right, before we go to the break, we've got another text in here, and it says, is there a way to have two clipboards run simultaneously and switch between them each? I'm preparing text to go online and am typing the in brackets looks like the I, and using a paste command to put in the close. Things would go much faster if I had two different paste commands.
There are some third-party programs to give you multiple clipboards, each with a different key to activate it. I haven't used them in a while. I just found one called Clipboard Master.
You might be able to. I remember back a couple of years ago, the Windows was talking about doing that. You needed to use WinV to switch between clipboards. I don't know if that's still true. You might have to, if you go into the system, into settings, and look for clipboard, you may find that you can turn on a second clipboard.
There's a setting called clipboard. You can sync your clipboards across your devices. That happened to me the other day. I was copying and pasting a serial number, and at the same time, Tyler on one of the other computers copied a different serial number, and it got synced to my computer, so I pasted the wrong one.
What you can do in the clipboard is save multiple items, and then the you hitting the Windows key, that logo key, plus V will let you see the history of what's in the clipboard, and you pick the one you want. So it's not two clipboards, it's one clipboard, but with multiple items in it from which you can pick.
You select the different things that you added to it.
Right.
Pick and choose off the items, like a numbered list or something.
A clipboard history, they're calling it.
Although if what you're using it for is to close a bracket, it's the same number of keystrokes to just hit shift and whatever that number is. But still, go ahead and do what you got to do, but I may have misunderstood your thing there. So, well, that music tells us that you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nine cents. Oh Lord, I need a nap. Well, don't go away. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back. Maybe not me, and maybe I'll be asleep by then. But with Dave Enright and Steve Ray, and maybe me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow, that must mean you're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that we can continue to stay on the air because we are solely member supported. Jazz 90.1. Take a slightly longer break, maybe a little bio break, and we'll be back in just a few more minutes. So don't go too far, and we'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites.
Still.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Funny things happen.
Hard to admit.
31 years and still going.
Still going. Okay, our next caller is Vivian from Honeyoy, New York. Hi, Vivian. How are you?
Hi, I'm just fine, thank you. I hope you're all very well too, and I thank you every time I have a computer question that you have this program.
Thank you, Vivian.
I'm 72 years old, and I'm retired from RIT, so I have some computer experience, but not much. And my question is this: my 2012 iMac. Told me that, you know, enough is enough. So I just purchased a Mac Air, And my question is, I do not want to transfer all this junk on this computer I've had since 2012. There might be a few things, but not much. So my question is this. I do back up on an external hard drive periodically, so I do have that. But what is the easiest thing for me to do to clean this up, to just simply follow the instructions that they sent me about what you do before you sell, give away, or trade your iMac, because they are giving me some money for the return of that, and just get rid of everything and start fresh with the new one when it comes in a week? Or should I go through the old one and try to figure out what I want, what I don't want, because most of it I don't want? Anything that's really important, I have a hard copy of somewhere. Plus, as I say, I have the external backup from that.
Yeah, you might want to do one last backup, just so you have the most recent stuff on that backup drive. Apple has a migration assistant that will migrate the data from your old computer to your new computer, but it's a basically all or nothing kind of shot. So it migrates everything.
Right.
So if
was my understanding.
If there's more things you want than don't want, you can migrate everything and then delete what you don't want. But if there's more things you don't want, it's usually easier to start fresh on the new computer. And then just restore the few things you do want from your backup drive, or even on the iMac, put it on a copy those files to a flash drive, and then plug that into the new Mac and copy them back.
Okay. Or at the store, they had suggested if I want to put things in iCloud, but I don't know if I want to get all involved in that. As I say, I don't like a couple of the things that I have on here. I had the Microsoft. Word and all of that. I don't need that stuff anymore. And with all the craziness with Microsoft, I'd rather not have them on it and just learn how to use the few things that I need on Apple.
And it's possible the version you have on the old computer isn't compatible with the new computer anyway. Use the free Apple software that it comes with.
Let me ask.
I didn't update. In the past year, I've been listening to you all, and you said, don't bother paying them that money every year.
Right.
All
right, so let me ask this, and this, I'm actually asking this more of Steve. If she does a final backup from the old machine to the external drive and then plugs that external drive into the new machine, won't she have access to all of those data anyway?
Yes. And then you can copy that data back onto your internal drive, the ones that you do want.
Yeah, have her do a house cleaning before she does the backup of the stuff that she doesn't want.
Right.
Right.
So what program are you using to do your backup?
Probably the Time Machine built-in program.
Well, I guess. I have the Lacey one TB, whatever that is, drive. And what you just said.
The Time Machine,
The
built-in backup software.
So if you move that over to the other machine and turn on Time Machine there, it should find the backups that exist.
Right, and you can restore individual files and folders as you want.
Yeah. So that's the easiest thing to do.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, bottom line. I know you'd be able to help me. Thank you so much.
Yep.
It's our pleasure.
Welcome.
Have fun.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Vivian.
And the other issue is that the laptop will probably have a smaller hard drive than the iMac did, because everything is SSD now. But the SSDs you get now are smaller than the HDs you used to get, so it probably wouldn't fit everything on the new machine.
Right. Depending on how full it was.
Yeah.
I was just looking at 2 terabyte SSDs. They're not cheap.
Nope.
They're not cheap at all.
Apple's got an 8 terabyte SSD they sell for the iMacs now, and I think it's $4,000.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, I've got an old Brother laser printer, monochrome. And it's about, must be close to 10 years, but it works just great. I frequently get these messages or dialogue boxes that come up that toner is low and it's going to replace it pretty soon. But this has been going on for months. I'm mean, it must be 3 months at least. And I think there's still a good amount of tonal left. I'm just wondering how I can suppress these messages.
Usually you can't. Sometimes you can tell the printer you put in new toner anyway, but quite frequently there is a toner sensor. What we found on some of the Brother printers is that there's a little transparent hole, basically, on the side of the toner cartridge, and it shines a light through the toner cartridge to tell how much toner there is in it. And so if you cover that hole with black tape, it thinks it's full.
Oh. You know, I've got a third-party toner cartridge in there, too, because the Brother is a bit more expensive, and this works just fine. But I imagine it probably has the same kind of hole.
Probably similar, yeah.
All right, well, it depends on which Brother printer you have.
It's a 7...
I don't know all the models, but I do know that on some of them, if you turn on the printer and open the toner door and then hit the clear or back button on the console, you can scroll through a list of the toner cartridges that have been in that printer.
Okay.
Until you find one that says replace toner, and then reset that one with the one button. And then press clear back again, and then close the door, and you're done.
Yeah. Now that the warning has come up, there may not be a way to suppress that warning without actually changing the toner, or telling it you've changed the toner. But then you can put the little sensor, or cover the sensor if you can, so that it doesn't know anymore.
Right. So I'll go in there and scroll through the menu and see if I can find that.
Yeah.
A lot of time too, it's. Say your toner has a 1,000-page life, and there's 100 pages left, and so you start getting a warning. Well, if you haven't printed 100 pages in 3 months, you can still keep getting the warning.
That's right. We do maybe at the most 5 to 10 pages a month, frankly.
Yeah. And the other thing you can often do is take the cartridge out and shake it up, which redistributes it, will let it print a few more pages. Right. What's especially annoying is on usually it's the color inkjet printers. If one of the colors is out, it won't print.
Right.
Even if you try to print in a different color, I just want to print black. Well, your magenta's out. You can't print anything. I just want to print black.
Right.
Your magenta's out. I want to print black. Your magenta's out.
But anyway, you can try that. Other than that, there isn't really an answer. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks a lot. All right, take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Sometimes the answer is there's nothing you can do about it. Live with it. And at least then you know that you've done everything you can do.
Yeah. And it is kind of nice that it gives you the warning so you can order a new toner cartridge before it runs out in the middle of a job.
Right.
But very few people print that much anymore. So you don't, that last 100 pages may last the whole year.
Right. I know that I'm ready to replace the toner cartridge when I start getting fainter on the right hand side,
which is annoying because why is it only one side and not all? So you shake it up and then it evenly distributes it and you get a few more pages out of it.
Yep, I don't know. That's a good question.
All right, we had another text come in. It says, "I use Opera browser and like it very much. Are there any concerns I should know of?"
No-ish. One of the things about the Opera browser is that it does do a VPN now, kind of automatically. So depending on where that VPN is heading, you got a couple of issues. One is, do you trust wherever that VPN is going? And that's, I can't answer that question for you. You can change where the VPN goes, by the way, just by clicking on the words VPN in the bar and then changing the location. But do you trust where that VPN is going? Secondly, sometimes if your VPN is in, say, Russia, there are places you can't go in America that simply blocks you. But other than that, Opera is a pretty good browser and doesn't really have any serious issues. It's simply that. That's simple enough.
All right. Been getting late. It's really wild lately how many text messages that we're getting in just over the past month.
People have...
That they're listening to us on the go.
Yes, they're listening to us either live through the Jazz 90.1 app or directly on the stream or... they're, you know, listening somehow, but they've got their phones, and it's easier to, for many people, they're either listening on their phones or the phone is right in their hand while they're listening,
mm-hmm.
and it's just easier to use that than it is anything else. And, of course, you can always set up a text thing for that, so you can just hit the one button and
Remember that one guy that used to always take Saturdays, and he planned it to take his wife to do the errands.
Right.
He'd stay in the car and listen to us on the radio so he could listen to the show and yet, you know, run her around getting all her errands done. Mm-hmm. And yep. He did it every Saturday.
But by the way, I should mention this. If you are one of those people who's on the run and you want to listen to us over the air, over your phone, rather, the easiest way to do that is with the Jazz 90.1 app.
Yep.
Download that, install it, and one of the things that you can do is listen live to the station, or you can listen to our old podcasts and all kinds of things. It will use your data, so you need to be aware that it is, just like everything else, it will use your data.
There is an app for that?
There's an app for that. There's an app to use your data, too. There's an app for that. But, yeah, so you can easily do that. So check out the Jazz 90.1 app. It's got lots of other neat features in it as well.
Access to all the other shows that are on the air, too.
Exactly. And it is well worth the free download.
All right. We had another person. They retexted in and it says, I don't trust anything that wants to start with Windows and is not easy to disable, which is Opera started doing after its update.
Okay. I not necessarily understand all that, but I
get it. Yeah, I know. It's,
you really don't want to use necessarily all the things from Windows. Look, if you're going to use Windows, Microsoft has your information. If you're going to use a Chromebook, Google has your information. If you're going to use a Mac, Apple has your information. There's no way you get away from that.
Yeah, it's...
But if you want to spread that around, you can give Opera your information on a Windows machine, or you can give Google your information on a Windows machine. You can do same on a Mac. You can do all of that stuff. My desktop is Linux, and I know that there are many programs I can run that don't send your information to anybody because I get to look at the source code. But I still use Chrome because it's more convenient.
I suppose maybe he's talking about the cruft that some PCs come with.
And certainly there is the cruft that many PCs come with.
It's one of the reasons. One of the ways
phones
they,
as well.
Yeah, one of the ways they make their prices lower is by accepting ads, basically programs with ads from other companies.
That's how they make money, and
some of them you can't remove.
Right.
Well, that's where some folks get ticked off. Like with the malware bites, the super anti spyware, and some of the others that they're being nagged with ads. Well, then purchase it.
Yeah.
Buy and support the product, and guess what? That goes away.
It's only a few bucks.
And that's how they make their money, and that's how they can keep doing the updates and everything else. They can't keep living off of, you just using their product and not supporting it. And we've been saying that for decades.
Right. Right. So, yeah, be aware that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And... first time I heard that phrase was a Robert Heinlein.
Yep.
Story, Ten Stoffel.
Well, it's just like the, the Revo uninstaller. They had a great deal there during the holidays. You could get 2 years service for a 1 year price. So I wound up getting, because you had to get it for each computer, and I put it on two of my computers, mine and the wife's, and this way, we can uninstall stuff, and it does a great job of going through and finding other Windows stuff that's in there that you might want to get out, and it'll do it safely, and it removes it all. And The other big reason we recommend, or at least I've been recommending Revo for so long, is I learned a long time ago, when you're uninstalling stuff from on a Windows machine, the whole problem with the Windows uninstaller, the code is very lazy in that all it does is turn off one bit. And then your registry keeps getting bigger and bigger as you install and uninstall things. Say like a printer, you know, the printer goes wrong. So you think you uninstall it and then reinstall it. And you do that five or six times. If you look at all the entries, which you will see when you use Revo Uninstaller that are in your registry, you'd be amazed. There's hundreds of lines in there that are in there referencing, say, the printer.
I have seen multi-gigabyte registries.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you wonder, why is my machine so slow to boot? Well, it's got to read in and then parse through two gigabytes of data. And going to Steve's earlier point that SSD cards are not as big as hard drives anymore. Mm-hmm. 2 gig is a lot more space.
Yeah.
We had a customer come in this week with his hard drive was full. He said, I downloaded too much stuff and my computer don't work no more.
Yeah.
Yeah, your hard drive was full. Found an 80 gigabyte log file.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, he turned on mail logging.
Wow.
Oh.
80 gigabytes of mail got logged as coming in and going, cause, you know, that's what you do all day long is read your mail.
Right, exactly.
So that freed up 10% of his drive.
There you go.
But that's the thing, though. In using a product like Revo Uninstaller and to uninstall things, it keeps your machine running a lot smoother and, you know, freeing up that space that you need for those other items that you want to keep on there and not running out of hard disk space.
Right.
So, I mean, just a word to the wise in using different products and supporting them. Because that's the only way you're going to get new improvements and advancements. You know, as Microsoft keeps updating stuff and that, you know, they always want you to bigger, better, faster. And that's the way we want things now. We were talking before, you know, the old dial-up modem days and all that. People nowadays, if they had to, the kids that are getting online right now, say with fiber and everything else, would have not been able to tolerate what we put up with when we first started. When you had the phone, you had to put it into a coupler.
The screeching noise, that took like a minute before you actually were connected.
Yep. I'll tell you what.
A whole minute.
I use a program called Tiny To-Do, which lets me put up an online to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's an amazing product. It's absolutely free. And I had a question about it today, and I realized I've been using it for months. And so I sent him a donation, and then I sent him a question. I didn't think it was fair to ask a question without, and I just really didn't think about how long I'd been using it. And it then led me to look at some other things I've been using and donate to them as well. But he then replied and said, thank you for the donation. I first, few people donate.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it's great to see somebody donating before he asks a question. And third, I've already fixed this error in the repository, and it'll be in the next update in about 2 weeks.
Well, that's
okay. There you go.
Well, that's the thing, though. Same with me. There's this one program that's out there for logging your calls and all that in ham radio, and it's out there. It's free, and thousands of people use it. And I had been switched over to it, but like you know, I saw it and I had a question, but you know, I'd been using it for about a month now and I really like all the features. So I sent him a small donation and I said, and if you don't mind, can I ask a question? That guy got back to me within a couple of hours. He said, thank you very much for the support. Like you said, a lot of folks don't, you know, take the time to support a product. I thank you very much. It's very helpful. It kind of reinstalls my efforts. And he goes, and you can ask as many questions as you want now. So I said, just ask the simple one. And he quick came right back to me. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. And over time now, I've had a couple others. But the whole community is very good about answering the questions because, again, you know, you're paying for the product and help supporting it. And that's what keeps this stuff going, and new and innovative ways of doing things and improvements. Because, you know, no software, not even Windows to this day, comes out and is 100%. There's always tweaks and everything else that can always be done to improve it. Or other features that, I didn't think about this, you know, when I first right. wrote it. And now all of a sudden I want to add this feature or that feature. That takes time and effort. And now all of a sudden you got to roll it on out. And it's not only doing the features, but then you also have to take the time to do the documentation to note what you did and why you did it and explain it to folks. So there's time, you know, just not creating it. There's a lot of background that you don't realize. There's a file here that, you know, tells me how to do all this. That takes time to do documentation, too, which a lot of folks don't even think about.
Back in the day, probably 1980, well, I could look it up, actually, 1982, maybe, there was a guy named Jim Knopf, K-N-O-P-F. And he created Buttonware. And it was really the first shareware software, although he didn't call it that. And I sent him a donation for a program called PC File, Easy File at the time. It was a database. And I sent him a donation. I've still got the letter somewhere in my files. He wrote back and said, "You're my first donation. This is amazing."
Cool.
He said, it's good. I only sent him a few bucks.
Yeah,
it was 1982. A few bucks was a lot of money.
Yep.
I think I sent him $5, but it was,
it's just the thought and the support that means a lot to programmers, because you don't realize, if you've never programmed, folks, the hours and hours that you put in to create something that you just put out there and hope, you know, folks are going to like and use.
Exactly. And back then, there was no such thing. He was the first shareware guy. He was the first person who said, "Use it. If you like it, pay me." All right, we're going to take a quick break. And you know what? We run this radio station the same way. If you like it, please be a member. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's a little loud.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I still like that tune.
It's a good tune. It was just loud.
There's some controversy over the lyrics, though.
I'm sure there is. Everybody's got controversy about everything nowadays.
Well, there was apparently an R-rated music video that I didn't know about. And someone told me, "Have you ever seen us?" I didn't know about it. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right.
Because YouTube censored it. You couldn't find it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. All right. So this is, speaking of controversy, both Zoom and Twitter found themselves under fire this last weekend for their respective issues with algorithmic bias.
Yep.
On Zoom, it's an issue with the video conferencing service's virtual backgrounds. And on Twitter, it's an issue with the site's photo cropping tool. It started when PhD student Colin Madlin tweeted about a black faculty member's issues with Zoom. According to Madlin, and there is video evidence of this, whenever the said faculty member would use a virtual background, Zoom would remove his head. It's just a shirt.
Yeah.
walking around. We have reached out directly to the user to investigate this issue, as Zoom spokesrobot said. We're committed to providing a platform that is inclusive for all. When discussing that issue on Twitter, however, the problems with algorithmic bias compounded when Twitter's mobile app defaulted to only showing the image of Madeline, the white guy, in the preview. It cropped out the black faculty member. Our team did a test for bias before shipping the model and did not find evidence of racial or gender bias in our testing, a Twitter spokesrobot said. But it's clear from these examples that we've got more analysis to do. Twitter pointed to a tweet from its chief design officer, Dantley Davis. Dantley Davis, who ran some of his own experiments. Davis posited that Madeline's facial hair affected the results. So he removed his facial hair, and the black faculty member appeared in the cropped preview. In a later tweet, Davis said he's as irritated about this as everyone else. However, I'm in a position to fix it, and I will. Twitter also pointed to an independent analysis from Vinay Pradhu, chief scientist at Carnegie Mellon. In his experiment, he sought to see if the cropping bias was real. In response to the experiment, Twitter TCO, a CTO, Chief Technology Officer, Parag Agrawal, said in addressing the question of whether cropping bias is real is a very important question. In short, sometimes Twitter does crop out black people and sometimes it doesn't. But the fact that Twitter does it at all, even once, is enough for it to be problematic. It also speaks to the bigger issue of the prevalence of bad algorithms. These same types of algorithms are what leads to biased arrests and imprisonment of black people. They're also the same kind of algorithms that Google used to label photos of black people as gorillas and that Microsoft's Taybot used to become a white supremacist.
In record time.
In record time, in seconds, I think it was.
Yeah.
So how are your Zoom and Twitter experiences? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I've seen Zoom's background replacement feature do weird things with hair.
Yeah.
So the longer your hair is, the worse the effect becomes.
Yeah, for me, there's this kind of shimmery halo all around my face. Which I assume I have in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Along with the you-know-what.
I'm trying to contain myself.
Yeah, please do. So the algorithmic bias of both Twitter and Facebook, in fact, Facebook too, and Zoom and several other platforms, is a very tough one, because... Let's face it, they have a very small sample, right? And so this particular faculty member had a particularly wild hair and beard style, and it had not been tested for.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that can be fixed. That can be dealt with. Yeah. But it because you use and by relatively small, there are millions and millions and millions of people using Zoom. So no matter how big your sample size is, it's going to be relatively small. And so that's a problem. And like we said, Microsoft had a problem with the Kinex. The camera on Kinex didn't recognize black people.
Mm-hmm.
Their camera on facial recognition for unlocking your machine didn't recognize black people. And not just black people, people of color, people with darker skin.
Yes.
There were early problems with the Apple Watch, the sensors on the back of it not being able to read darker skin, or if you had a tattoo.
Right, right. So there are a number of those issues that constantly need to be dealt with. And for the most part, you have to say, for the most part, companies are very quick to make those fixes. So that's not a bad thing. They're doing pretty well with that.
There was an article, let's see if I can find it again, that talked about on Security Now, where a research company did research into facial recognition programs. And they tested like 1,000 programs. And the first surprise was there's 1,000 different facial recognition programs.
Yeah.
And they found most of them don't do well on the minority race of their own country, but some of the Asian ones did pretty good on Asian and white, but not black.
Right.
And then there were I'm finding the article, and it's interesting to see the biases were different depending on the country of origin.
Right.
Which makes sense in retrospect, but there's that many facial recognition programs on the open market for sale.
Yep, mm-hmm. There are. So it's an issue, and of course this also speaks directly to companies like the FBI that use these as well. If there's an inherent bias in the algorithm, then that speaks badly for how well. The results are how good the results are. So, but that was an interesting little thing because they actually had a video of the guy of the black faculty member. You could see him just fine, and he did. He had a fairly wild beard and wild hair, and he looked fine. And then he turned on his filter, and bang, no head. It was like an Invisible Man movie. I mean, it's funny until you realize the implications.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. I mean,
I pulled one of the pictures up, and it looks like there's some sort of sculpture behind him. And when it removed his let me move it over there. When it removed his face, it also removed that sculpture, which is kind of similar to the color of his shirt.
Right.
And to the background in the windows.
Well, that's a different guy. He doesn't have a beard or the wild hair. Oh, that's interesting.
It's a different story based on the same thing?
Basically,
What's the date on that? No, that's the one from this week.
Well, there were a couple then.
There were several of them, yeah. Yeah, so that was the one on Zoom, and then the one on Facebook, Twitter, it was cropping the two pictures differently and cropping out the one guy with the darker skin.
Right.
But that's the whole thing. You know, this is a whole new territory. You know, just like AI and everything else, you know, it's going to go through quite a few learning. But, you know, it's something that they can react to quickly and correct.
Right.
It's nothing that's being done
intentionally.
Intentionally. You know, the intelligence of the software is only as good as the people that are making it. And right now, it's a whole new area and learning how to do this versus that. And sure, there's going to be all kinds of mistakes.
Right. It was the NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, that did this study. They looked at a database of 18 million images of 8 million people. And the databases are operational, and it came from the State Department, Homeland Security, and the FBI.
Wow.
They didn't use anything scraped off the internet. They used databases that law enforcement is already using.
Right.
And found some really bad problems.
Well, and that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, that's, you know, first, that's the issue with any of these artificial intelligence systems or any sort of algorithmically based data. It's only as good as the data. It's garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
Right? And so if the data are not good or the algorithm itself is not correct, you can get all kinds of wildly bad answers.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the things about those CAPTCHAs. You are teaching an object recognition database, and so it would be good to put in the right answers.
Right. I did one the other day that would not let me go on.
Yeah.
I was putting in all the right answers. It kept asking me another one and another one and another one and another one. I thought, whatever, I forget what it was, but whatever I was going for, I didn't need it that much.
I guess I don't need that after all.
Right.
Or when you go to change your password, you type your password, doesn't work. Type your password, doesn't work. Type your password. All right, I'll change my password. You put in the new password, can't use the last password.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what really annoys me is they don't. Look, I get it. It's a security thing. But they don't tell you how long a password can be. They don't tell you what the algorithm is. Well, you know, must use upper and lowercase, must use whatever. So you type in a password, and then it says must have an uppercase letter. So you type another one in, must have a number. Type that in, must have a symbol. Well, tell me all that in the beginning. Tell me how long you want it. Tell me everything right away.
Yeah,
I like the ones that give you the list, and as you're typing, it turns them green as you meet the criteria.
Right.
Well, I hate the ones where you go to type it in. You know, like you say, they don't tell you anything until you hit enter. Then it comes back after you've typed it in and then verified it, and then you hit enter, And then it comes back, oh, no, you got to add at least this, 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 and this. It's like, why didn't you tell me that at the beginning that here's some of the features that you need to have included in your password, like uppercase, lowercase, numbers, punctuation.
Well, when I created the form for my wife's coffee system, thebeanqueen.com, you can order coffee online. But when I created it, people were hitting enter without putting in their names and phone mm-hmm. numbers. So she had no way to make contact with them. So she said, oh, you need to fix that. That's not easy to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, so that it both works on the computer and on the phone, and you get all the data without not annoying people too
not
much.
Not empty. Right. Is not enough.
Yeah. Right. So it took a while for me to get that right, and it annoyed the everything out of me, but it means that people will have an easy time using it.
We did that in our database at work to get the password of the computer we're working on, and so we made the password a required field, not empty. One of the employees will put a space in. Mm. So the criteria is met.
Yes.
And then we have to call them and get their password.
Yep.
Or when they say, I don't have one. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't ask me for one. That's not what I asked.
Yeah.
Yes, you can set it to auto log in, but whenever you do administrative things like we need to do, it wants your password.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, same with, you know, passwords for email. Yeah. I don't use a password. Yes, you do.
You did that first time and then told your computer to remember it.
And it just automatically remembers it.
I didn't write it down. Yeah, we're on that trade-off where I wish it wouldn't ask you to remember your password. Then you would have to remember more. But then more of them would be the same.
Right. Mm. Oh, yeah. And they would all be A.
Yeah.
Or space.
Space.
No, I have... I was looking up something the other day, and it led me to, because I, you know, man, I go down the rabbit hole way too often. I discovered that you can put a PIN number on your Chromebook instead of a password. So you can use either the password or the PIN number.
Microsoft has a thing about that, and how is a four-digit PIN more secure than a passcode? It isn't really.
It's not. And I thought, really? Is your password? So mine is like 22 characters. And I can still type it in every time without a problem. I don't need to replace that with a 4-character PIN.
Yeah. I wish both Windows and Mac would stop making the first account be your only account.
Right.
Because then everyone is running as an admin. And then that's one of the biggest ways that malware gets installed is you're already an admin, so it doesn't have to ask permission to install.
Right.
We should all run as a standard user and only use your admin user for administrative purposes.
Well, and that's the way Linux works.
Yeah.
When you're in as a user and you have to do something, sudo or whatever, to be the admin.
Yeah.
And that makes it, that's one of the reasons it's so much safer. There are things you just can't do without an admin password.
Yep. Make me a sandwich.
Sudo make me a sense, right? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for being there for us.
Thank you.
I have an iPhone 11 with an annoying problem, and I've tried a bazillion things to fix it, and no luck so far. The notification when I get a text message keeps turning itself off, even though I don't have it on silent. The only fix I have found is to actually restart the whole phone. That's the only thing I can get it to do to come back, because I get text messages all the time and I miss them all the time because I don't feel the vibration and the sound turns off automatically.
Right.
So,
it turns off all the sound or just the notification sound?
Just the notification, only for text messages.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would try to set a different sound for notification and see if that sticks. Maybe there's something corrupt in that sound file.
He said he has.
I've tried that.
You tried that?
I tried that.
That's not the answer he wanted.
Yeah. See, most of the search results I'm finding are how to turn off the notification. It keeps annoying me all the time.
Right.
But no, I want the notification on.
That's right. That's right. The only fix I found on an Apple support group is to reset everything on your phone, but then you'll lose all your passwords and all your Wi-Fi stuff, and you got to re-enter all that, right?
Right.
Well, turn on iCloud Keychain, and then it will store all that in the cloud and sync it back down to your device.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Good one.
Yeah, that would certainly work.
Interesting. Only the text notification and not other notifications.
Yeah, the phone still rings, and I get other notices from other apps, but it's only text.
Do you have a what's the word I want? There's a geographic filter where don't text, do not disturb. Check your,
I never turned that on, and my tech guy at RIT suggested that it might be some interference with another app running in the background that has audio as a component. And there have been a couple occasions where I went in and shut everything off, all the other apps off, and then it would work for a day or two, and then it went silent on me again.
Interesting.
That's weird.
I am on one of the Apple discussion forums, and there are people who've been having this problem since at least December of 2019.
Yeah, I keep waiting for an update.
Nice not to be alone.
Well, and that's what they're all saying. Finally, somebody else with the same problem. I thought it was me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we don't have an answer for that.
Okay. Well, if
maybe
you
turn it off manually, and maybe it will turn on automatically by itself.
No, I've tried that. I tried this for months now, and the only thing that consistently works is shut down the phone and it restart it, and it works fine
for a couple days.
Something corrupt in the OS level, apparently.
Okay, well, then I'll reset the whole thing, right?
Yeah, set up Apple Keychain and then reset the whole thing.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Good luck. Sorry. Sometimes the answer is nobody knows.
Yeah. I will frequently forget to turn my Do Not Disturb off and then 3 days later realize I haven't heard my phone ring.
Yeah. Yeah, I can set a time, so I set it from 11:30, I think it is, until 2.
Geofencing, that's what I want. Not disturb until I leave this location.
Yeah, I have that too, actually. But I noticed I missed a call from my wife while I was here.
Well, I had, last week, go to call a wife, and it automatically kept going to the voicemail. Okay, she's on the phone. So I try 20 minutes later. Goes right to the voicemail. Tried an hour later. Goes right to voicemail. Now, oh, the heck with this. And I waited until afternoon, tried to call her, let her know I'm goes to voicemail. I get home, and she goes, "You didn't call me. How come?" I go, "Here." And I try calling. Boom, it goes right to voicemail. She goes, "I don't know what's going on." Evidently, you blocked me. Well, I wouldn't do that. Sure enough, I went through her numbers there, and she had me as a blocked number.
That's hysterical. Did she do that in her sleep? Is that some subconscious thing?
I don't know how I did that.
You know how many buttons you have to accidentally push in the correct order?
She did it.
Yeah, accidentally. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, that music tells us you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this stuff. We are done for this week, but don't despair. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more Dave Enright, a whole lot more Steve Ray, way too much Nick Francesco, and of course, not quite enough of all of you on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You as we gear up for another pledge drive that with your generous support, we remain member supported. Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another. We will see you in just 166 hours.